Head to Subway for the tangy new Tuscan Chicken Melt, seasoned chicken, melted cheese, and olive vinaigrette. With 9 grams of fat, it's part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal. A simpler way to enjoy eating better. Hurry in today. Subway. Eat fresh.
The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. My favorite day of the year coming up, the NBA draft. And normally I do a little back and forth with my man Chad Ford, where we argue about each pick and try to see who gets the bragging rights. But I had to forfeit this year, Chad, because I did not watch enough college hoops because I was working on my book. So I'm forfeiting the title to you this year.
I appreciate that. I accept the title.
You will have it for a year. I will be back strong in 2010. I wasn't going to pretend. I'd only seen a few of the guys. And I have some opinions on some of the guys, but not all of them. And it just, I don't know. I could not have matched wits with you this year. You're the champ.
Well, I've had it for the last 3 years, so maybe someday you'll win it, Bill.
How dare you? You had Odin. You had Odin in 2007. You might have won last year.
That's because you got a draft first every year.
You might have won last year. I might concede last year, but I did win in 2007. So Tuesday, we're taping this at 2:30 East Coast time. Do you sleep? Do you sleep during draft week?
Not much, because between Mike and Mike early in the morning and phone calls, which all happen late at night, and then writing, sometimes 2-3 hours, night of the draft, nothing.
How much false crap are you chasing? Because as we know, in the modern 2009, the internet has evolved to the point where anything can go up on a message board and you don't know if it's true or not. You have to at least follow it for 10 minutes, right?
Well, 90%. I mean, look at this, this Celtics, rumor today. It's not that it was a false rumor. I mean, it does sound like, from what I understand, that the Pistons were approached, about a deal for Rajon Rondo. But the Pistons quickly turned it down, and we've been, chasing it all day, because of that. So, I'd say 90% of the stuff that I hear, either because it was something on the internet or just even stuff people give me, turns out to be bogus and a dead end. And 10% seems to be real.
What's interesting to me is that the trades that actually happen never get floated out beforehand. Like this, like for instance, right as we went to tape this today, Richard Jefferson got traded to the Spurs. I did not hear one whisper about that for an entire month. That trade came out of nowhere.
It did. And it's we should have put it together because we knew that the Bucks were trying to move Jefferson to clear enough money under the luxury tax to be able to re-sign Charlie Villanueva and Ramon Sessions this summer. Those guys are both restricted free agents. And we knew the Spurs were out there shopping Oberto and Bowen, trying to add another piece so that they could compete for a championship. But we did not put those two teams together. And when it happens, it caught us all a little bit by surprise.
I have to say I was very surprised because the Spurs haven't really been buyers. They've been of the model of, we have our top three, we have our three guys making eight figures a year, and we're going to fill role players around. We're just not going to vacillate from that. And if it works, it works. Doesn't work, doesn't work. Now they're going to have four guys making eight figures.
Yeah, they are. And they're going to have that for the next 2 years. And then Jefferson comes off the books and Ginobili's off and they can start over. I mean, this is clearly the Spurs saying, we've got a 2-year window now to try to win another NBA championship. That's probably about right for Tim Duncan. That's probably all he's got left.
Yeah.
And it's probably all Ginobili's got left. And so they're going to go for it. And I think as a Spurs, I'm not a Spurs fan, but if you're a Spurs fan, you got to appreciate them making one last, lunge, for the NBA title. Though they're going to, when they fall, they're going to fall pretty hard.
I'm not sure they're done. I am not convinced that they're going to pay four guys this much money. And, I just think you look at Parker. I floated this out in a mailbag, totally made up. I have no inside information, just a trade that made sense to me. Maybe now is the time that you move Parker. He's never going to have more value than he had after last season. He's making a fair amount of money. This is your one chance maybe to turn a piece into a draft pick and a player who can give you maybe 80% of what Parker gave you. My idea was Parker for Randy Foy, the number six, and I forget which Brian Cardinals expiring contract there. Somehow it evens out, but maybe they have to make a move like that. What do you think?
I think that's a possibility for them, though obviously going from Tony Parker to Randy Foy is a pretty big drop.
Not if you throw in George Hill, though.
Yeah,
if George Hill gets better, maybe not as big of a drop.
Maybe. You know, I don't know that George Hill will be better than a serviceable, you know, backup in the league, but he might be. I thought maybe the Spurs are the team that should. I mean, if Danny Ainge really wants to trade Rajon Rondo, maybe a Tony Parker deal for Rajon Rondo. That gives the Spurs a guy who, you know, obviously we know can play at a championship level. And it gives, you know, the Celtics another young point guard who also can compete at a championship level. And I don't know, maybe that makes some sense.
Well, that would be interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, we could have had Parker in 2001 and did not take him. We took Joe Forte, which I'm ashamed to admit I was excited about at the time because I thought maybe Joe Forte could be converted into a point guard. This is before we realized that you can't, if you're a shooting guard in college, you can't just switch to point guard in the pros. I didn't fully realize that yet. But for whatever reason, I do think there's some life to this Rondo stuff. I really do. It's been floated around too many times, and I don't feel like they've really come out and said, look, we are not trading Rajon Rondo. Stop reading and talking about this stuff. This guy's not going anywhere. This is stupid. They haven't done that.
No, I mean, you saw Danny's statement today. I was cracking up because out of one side of his mouth, he was saying, you know, I don't think we're going to make any trades, but then nobody's tradable. And we love Rajon Rondo, but if we do trade Rajon Rondo, it'll be to make our team better. And what I don't understand, Bill, is how does trading Rajon Rondo make the Celtics better? It doesn't make any sense. I think he was their best player in the playoffs. He's certainly the bridge between the old group and whatever the new group's going to be.
Yeah.
And you trade him away. I don't know how that makes it better. There's got to be something to what everybody's talking about Rondo and chemistry issues and you know, problems in the locker room, because it doesn't make any logical sense for them to be trying to trade Rajon Rondo.
Well, you just said the reason. Obviously, they feel like there's some more stuff going on behind the scenes that maybe they don't want to deal with, especially if you're looking at, I think, not this year, next summer, he's a restricted free agent. He's worth $70 million in the open market easily. They're already tied into Garnett. They're already tied into Pierce. There's something about this guy that is making them nervous about committing that kind of money to him. And I don't think the stories have come out yet. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll come out after he gets traded. But when you look at the way this guy played in the playoffs versus him now being inexplicably available, it's got to be something.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it was a triple-double machine.
Yeah.
I watched Ainge's press conference, and I was like, does no one ask follow-up questions in these press conferences? Because
No. What
he said doesn't make any sense.
Well, and the other factor they have, which nobody's really talked about yet, but I do think this is legitimate. Ray Allen is a smart dude. He knows that, you know, he's an expiring contract this season. He has really one more chance to make some money here. And maybe he's looking at 3 years, $28 million, something like that. I don't know. But he's going to be one of those guys that is going to be like, look, extend me. I want the security. And I don't think he's going to let it go. And honestly, I don't think they want to deal with it. So I would not be surprised if they traded Ray Allen this summer. I would be a lot more surprised if they traded Rondo. But now, I mean, didn't you think that Detroit trade was actually like a logical trade?
The Detroit trade?
Yeah, if you're Detroit and you have a chance to shed the Hamilton-Prince contracts basically for Allen and turn Stuckey into Rondo, and now you become this 2010 power player, mm-hmm. I think I'd do that.
Well, I think the concern is they want to win now. I think they feel like if they add – now, I'm not saying I agree with this, but I think the feeling is if they add Carlos Boozer and Ben Gordon, who I think that's who they're going to try to add, and they have Tayshaun Prince, and they have Richard Hamilton, and they have Rodney Stuckey, and Antonio McDyess, I think they feel like that team's super competitive in the East. And I'm not sure that Joe Dumars has the stomach to have another year like he had this year, because they would be gutting their roster. I mean, it would be Rajon Rondo, and then what? you know, who's the next best player on the Pistons after that? And, you know, they would have to go through that very difficult rebuilding year. And I think after this year, I just don't think the Pistons have the stomach for it.
Well, and also, if you're going to rebuild in a town that wasn't really showing up for your team when it was winning 50 games, you're looking at an attendance disaster. And I don't, they probably don't want to deal with that either, right? I'm looking at the numbers right now with, you intrigued me with this Rondo Parker thing. So Parker makes 11.5 this year, and Rondo makes, he doesn't make a lot. He makes 1.3. But the Celts have a couple expiring contracts they could add up, maybe make it work. That's not far-fetched.
No, that one wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rondo plays D. I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure how Popovich would handle both Rondo and Ginobili gambling in the backcourt the way both of those guys like to gamble. I mean, it may drive him nuts, but at the same time, it would be absolute havoc out there. And I actually like the Spurs better with Rondo than I do with Parker. And I do think if you're going to trade Rondo, Parker's a legitimate talent to get back in return.
So who do you think is the team out of the 30 that has to make a move before the draft on Thursday?
That has to make a move?
Has to.
I think it's the Knicks, because I don't know where the Knicks are going right now. At eight, they're not going to get anybody great. They've got to decide, what are they doing with David Lee and Nate Robinson? Do they just let those guys walk and hope that a great free agent comes in 2010? Or do they start to try to get good now? And it, would LeBron even come when there's no real talent on this team, unless you, you know, consider Danilo Gallinari, you know, a talent? I they're in limbo right now, and I think they run the risk of being so mediocre that none of the top free agents, even though it's New York and even though people like to play with D'Antoni, none of the top free agents that actually want to win really want to come there because they're too far away.
I have a solution.
Okay.
Tell me which team doesn't make this trade. You know I'm the master of fake trades.
I know. You're good. You're good. You took that title from me. I used to have that title, but that's yours now.
Yeah, thank you. The Knicks trade Eddie Curry, Jer Jeffries, and the number 8 pick to the Phoenix Suns for Shaquille O'Neal.
Mm.
Who doesn't make that trade?
Oh, wow. Phoenix?
Phoenix basically gets the number 8 pick.
Yep.
And they have to pay Curry and Jeffries through 2011. So,
right. And they don't. They only have to pay Shaq this year.
They don't have to pay Shaq this year. They save about $3 million probably with the trade. They'd probably have to throw in like Orlando Tucker or Jared Dudley or something so they could save a little more money. They'd save like $1 or $2 million, and they'd also have to pay the number 8 pick, so whatever. But if you're the Suns, this is your one chance to maybe get some young talent, because who is the young talent on this team? It's Barbosa and it's Robin Lopez. That's it.
If this was a better draft, I think I could see it, Bill. But at 8, you know, Drew Holiday, Brandon Jennings, DeMar DeRozan, I'm not sure that any of these guys are going to be players in the league. And they might be. They're all young and have upside, but they did nothing in college. This is a really weak draft. And I would say the 8th pick in this draft is the equivalent of the 18th pick in a normal draft. And then you say, would you do all that and have to pay Eddie Curry and Jared Jeffries, guys who are going to be absolutely useless on your team for the next 2 years, for the 18th pick in the draft?
Huh. You feel that way about Eddie Curry?
Just
come
a little
on.
Bit.
You don't think he can be redeemed?
No.
Not a chance?
Not a chance. Not
okay,
a chance.
Same trade for Jermaine O'Neal in Miami.
Same deal. You know, actually, I think one of the underreported things that's going on is, you know, Miami's going to have some cap room in 2010. They're going to have Dwayne Wade. They're going to have Michael Beasley. And they probably got the most attractive free agent destination in the NBA. I mean, maybe the Lakers are better. But, you know, Miami, South Beach, there's a lot of free agents that would love to play in Miami. I think they are a real contender to get Chris Bosh in 2010.
So you think they are not buyers or sellers this year, but they are biding their time until next year?
They're biding their time, and they moved Marion because they didn't like the free agent market this year. And so they're going to bide their time and try it in 2010. And I think they've got to be fairly confident of all the teams that are going to have cap room. Having Dwayne Wade is going to make them, and being in Miami is going to make them a pretty attractive destination.
Here's my counter. Is it that exciting to get Chris Bosh? So I get the best guy on a 30-win team? Where does that take me?
Yeah, Chris. I don't think it's Chris Bosh's fault that the Raptors are a 30-win team. I think he's a legitimate top five power forward in the league.
Could he be the Gasol to Wade's Kobe?
Oh, for sure.
See, I don't think so. I don't think he's that good.
You don't think he's that good?
I think he's 80% that good, but I don't know if he's that good.
But did you think Pau Gasol was that good before he started playing with Kobe?
I did. And in fact, I can remember where I was sitting and what restaurant I was at and who I was with when I heard about that trade and just being devastated. Because it had been my biggest fear that, you know, the Lakers were going to get Gasol basically for nothing, which is what they did. I just think he has gifts that are unique. You know, he does things that nobody else does.
It's really interesting to me. There's a lot of trauma about that trade.
There's a lot.
A lot of people, and they're not Grizzly fans, who talk about, I remember the time and place that I was at when I found out that Chris Wallace hand-delivered Pau Gasol to the Lakers.
Yeah.
And, you know, does Chris Wallace ever live that down?
No, never. And, well, hey, it was a two-pronged thing. First of all, it made them contenders. Second of all, it guaranteed that the Lakers weren't going to trade Kobe. And I had been rooting for them to trade Kobe because obviously, yeah, please trade Kobe. And you know this better than anyone. That Chicago thing was a lot closer than everyone remembers now.
It was real.
I mean, it was like I had somebody tell me that there were two separate nights that I think Rob Pelinka, I forget, he wasn't the one who told me, but Rob Pelinka told somebody this, that there were two separate nights that he went to bed thinking in the morning they're going to announce this deal. And each time it didn't happen. But the second time, basically, it was done, except Kobe found out Lil Deng was involved and said, I'm not going to the Bulls and just playing with a crappy team. And they could never kind of figure out how to make it work. But it really was the Lakers were going to trade him.
You know, here's in my mind the two legacies now for Memphis about this Gasol deal.
Yep.
One, it's going to cost them Ricky Rubio this year. Because Ricky Rubio starts talking to Juan Carlos Navarro. He starts talking to Pau Gasol. They start bad-mouthing Memphis. And he and his family tell his agent, Dan Fagan, we're not playing in Memphis.
Right.
And so it costs them the chance to have the second-best player in this draft. That's the first legacy. The second legacy is that Chris Wallace is so gun-shy now to make a trade where he isn't the overwhelming winner of the trade. That no matter, then this is what a number of GMs tell me when they're dealing with Chris Wallace now, they'll think they have a deal agreed to. And the minute that they think there's a deal in principle, Chris Wallace is going to call back about 30 minutes later and say there needs to be more in the deal. It's almost like if you agreed to the deal, it must be not good enough for me. It must be too good for you. And so now I've got to do it again. And this almost obsession about how other people are gauging this trade. And I feel bad for the guy just because I don't think this was Chris Wallace's idea to give away Pau Gasol. I think it was his owner's and he took the bullets there, but he's the guy who's been the face and has had to deal with it.
Well, he made two mistakes. And first of all, you described somebody who was like the guy that we all have in our fantasy league who you agree to a trade with, and then he backs out after you're like, but wait, I thought we agreed.
Yeah.
The real problem with this was that he didn't wait till the deadline to trade Gasol. And there were a lot of people who didn't even know, you know, that he was like that ready to do
right.
And people just thought it was going to happen the week of the deadline. Nobody knew that on, you know, 2 days before the Super Bowl, he was just going to dump the guy for 30 cents.
Right.
And that's the part I don't think he'll ever live down, because if you're a Grizzlies fan, did your GM do everything he could do to maximize the value of this guy that he obviously wanted to trade? And the answer is no, he didn't. So, you know, and then on top of that, you look at, it's just amazing. Like you look at that Lakers team, the Ariza thing, I still don't know how they got Ariza for Cook and Evans. The Fisher thing, just like this fluky, when's the last time somebody's just been let out of their contract?
Right.
You know, and these are basically Kobe's three sidekicks to win this title. So, yeah, I'm still thinking about it. I'm still bummed.
Yeah, and I think this Rubio development is the thing that's so interesting, because if you would have told me 2 months ago that Ricky Rubio was going to slide out of the top four in the draft, I would have said you're on crack. I mean,
it's amazing.
This kid is really good. And, you know, if you also had told me that Bill Simmons loved an international player at the top of the draft, that would have even shocked me more.
I know. In my defense, two things. First of all, and somebody threw this out. I forget where I read it, but I just read it, I think, yesterday about how, you know, his passing was compared to Maravich, Bird, and Steve Nash. There you go. It's not like people aren't like, man, his passing has a chance to be as good as these guys. They're like, no, it's there right now. Right. He is that good of a passer. And then, you know, I've written about this before, but the kid's 17, the starting point guard on Spain gets hurt. He goes against Jason Kidd, Darren Williams, and Chris Paul in the gold medal game, gets hurt halfway through the game, plays left-handed second half of the game, and doesn't kill Spain. That's it. I'm in right there. I want that guy on my team.
He's a phenom. And there's something about players like Ricky Rubio. They have an intangible, something that you can't quite describe or measure in a draft workout, or by checking off, you know, numbers on a form like a lot of teams do. That is so rare, when they come along in the draft. And, you know, I'm looking at the Kings saying, okay, they have Beno Udrih as their starting point guard.
Yeah.
They have a GM who was the guy who drafted Stojakovic, the guy who drafted Turkoglu, who's been one of the more progressive guys in the league as far as this goes. And they're really honestly thinking about taking Tyreke Evans, who I don't think can play a minute of point guard in the NBA, or Johnny Flynn, who actually I like quite a bit, but he's undersized. I think Johnny Flynn's a nice pick in the 10 to 15 range, not at four. And they're going to pass on Rubio because what, he's skinny. You know, his body's not, well, he's 18 years old.
Well, who's making the calls for the Kings? Because I thought the new guy was.
The new guy.
The guy they brought in. I can't remember.
Oh, Jason Levien?
Yeah.
No, he's not. Jeff Petrie's still running that basketball.
Are you sure?
I think he is.
See, I've heard conflicting reports.
That's interesting. I think he's still running the team. Now, in two or three years, maybe that's going to change, but. That'll be a story if Jeff Petrie doesn't make this pick.
I think his legs have been cut off, but what do I know? The real subplot of this is if the team that shall not be named, the Zombie Sonics, somehow end up with Ricky Rubio. and they would now have my favorite draft pick of the entire decade, Kevin Durant. Russell Westbrook, who was my favorite sleeper last year, until he rocketed up to number four. Jeff Green, who I loved in college. And now Rubio, who I'm just, you know, I've even written I would move to whatever city drafted him because I liked it that much.
Wow.
I don't know what I do if those four guys are in the same team. I don't know what happens to me.
Welcome to Oklahoma City. I can see you there, Bill.
I don't know I'd go that far, but I mean, I would watch that team. I would watch all 82 games.
We'd all watch them. They'd be fantastic. And, you know, Sam Presti, who I have great admiration for, I think he's done a great job rebuilding the Thunder.
Me too.
I think he's bright. He's innovative. He does things differently than other GMs do. That's why I keep having Ricky Rubio at number three in the mock draft. I know everybody tells me they're going to draft James Harden or they're going to draft the Beat, but I just have faith that this guy understands, no, Rubio's the special guy, and we'll figure out how to make it work on the court. I understand he's not a perfect fit next to Russell Westbrook because neither guy's a great shooter. But, you know, then again, Rubio's 18, and last year he shot 43% from three. So maybe he's not as bad a shooter as we thought, or maybe he's just getting better. As a jump shooter, guys can get better.
See, I'm the opposite. I think they're a great fit together.
Okay.
I love it because Westbrook, not a natural point guard, can play it. He's not. I think he'll eventually become like a Chauncey Billups type, not your typical slash and kick type of point guard, but a more physical guy who will be a distributor and also be able to create his own shot. But because of his size, he'll be able to guard shooting guards. And then you have Rubio, who can basically guard either guy, do whatever you need to do. I don't know. I just think it would work.
Hey, I would pay to watch the Thunder play next year. And, you know, I think it's interesting, the other little thing in Kevin Pritchard. Could we see Kevin Pritchard, the other guy who seems to just be charmed in the draft every year, move up and steal Ricky Rubio and have Rubio and Roy and, you know, Greg Oden and LaMarcus Aldridge and Rudy Fernandez and that whole team? Could that be the final piece to this young dynamic puzzle in Portland? I think if Pritchard can find a way, he's going to do it.
My counter would be this. What is he trading? I think they have the most overrated group of guys in the league. I mean, he'd have to at least give up Rudy Fernandez in that trade.
He might have to.
If he gave up the 18 and Rudy Fernandez for number five or number three.
But
maybe
here's the other counter. And let's say he slides the five at Washington. Washington just wants to get out of some money, right? That's a big part of what they want to do this summer. They could do that. They have two guys in Travis Outlaw and Steve Blake who have non-guaranteed deals this year. They could move those guys for a guy like an Etan Thomas or somebody that the Wizards want to get rid of, and that gives them the freedom to go out maybe in the free agent market or do whatever, add a piece. And we know the Wizards in the past have been willing to move picks, especially when they think they're competing. Now, I don't love the Wizards, but I do know they believe they're serious contenders for the Eastern Conference crown next year.
Oh, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Well, here's my counter to your counter, my counter, your counter, okay. My counter. If you're Ernie Grunfeld, do you really want to be the guy who wasted the number five pick, who turned out to be Ricky Rubio, who turned out to be an iconic guard, just because you wanted to get rid of Etan Thomas's contract? I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy to the Washington fans.
I think Washington should take him. I think he'd play right away. This whole thing, Ricky Rubio's not ready.
You know,
I don't understand. We don't say that about college players, but most college players, when they go to a league like the ACB or to, the Euro League, those guys don't play. He's playing against men. Ricky Rubio will have some problems, you know, physically and with the speed in the league at the first, but that kid's ready to play as much as anybody in this draft is, with the exception of maybe Blake Griffin.
I don't want to hear the not ready to play thing, because then that means that I made up the gold medal game in my head. What is a bigger pressure circumstance for a 17-year-old kid than that game? And he played and he came through and he didn't kill him. I mean, he didn't have a great game, but he got hurt halfway through and he still did the job. See, here's the thing, and this happens in the NFL draft all the time. Doesn't happen as often in the NBA draft, but it's something that, We end up talking ourselves into scenarios where, even though Ricky Rubio is clearly the second best guy in this draft, we're like, yeah, he might fall to five. When the actual draft happens, he's not going to fall below three. He just has more value than anybody else. It would be ridiculous if he fell below three. I could see maybe Thabit going ahead of him, but none of these other guys. I just don't see it.
I don't see it either. I've left him there. I know everybody thinks I'm crazy, but I have faith that Sam Presti's smart enough to figure this out, and maybe that the Grizzlies will end up making a deal. I think that's a likelihood as well, is that they'll end up giving it to Minnesota or to the Knicks or somebody, and they'll save some face somehow.
So Minnesota has six.
They have six, 18, and 28.
So maybe something like, we'll give you the two and Darko. You give us the 6, the 18, and somebody who doesn't make quite as much money as Darko, and we save $1 million there, and then we save a little bit with paying the 6 versus the 2, and I can talk my owner into that.
Were you just waiting for an opportunity to bring Darko up in this thing?
The over-under was the 22-minute mark. Did we go over? Oh, we went over. Wow.
I was waiting.
That was exciting. Yeah, I think Darko should move around every year. I think he should be on every team.
You know, if we could just get Adam Morrison in this conversation, then, I mean, we could really get going.
What the hell happened to that guy?
Hey,
I mean, I know
see.
He blew out his knee. At least there's like a tiny bit of an excuse, but what happened to him mentally?
How about this? Adam Morrison and Darko Milicic both have NBA championship rings.
It's amazing.
So we were right, you know?
Yeah, we were right.
Those guys won NBA championships.
The other guy that I could see the team that should not be named taking is Curry, because so I forget where I read it. Maybe it was you, the Mike Bibby comparison. I like that for him. I don't think he's maybe as natural of a point guard, but the same way he can kind of create 22 footers in traffic and the range and the rise to the occasion stuff. He just kind of fits in with what they have.
I won't take credit for that. That's David Thorpe.
Making
that, but I think David's right. I'm so intrigued by Curry. He a little bit like Rubio has this intangible quality. I was in Chicago, watching a bunch of prospects work out and Curry shows up in the gym that day. And when I walk into the gym just felt different. And I walked in and everybody in the gym was all staring in the same direction and no one was talking to each other and all this stuff normally going. It was quiet. It was almost like we were in church and everyone was just watching, Stephen Curry shoot the basketball. And the players, the agents, the coach, everyone. And they couldn't take your, you couldn't take your eyes off the kid. He's going to figure out a way to be successful. He does have some physical limitations. I think he's going to figure out a way to be successful. He's already, I think, better than anybody in this draft about being able to create space for a shot. That sometimes takes years for guys to learn in the league. And I think he's going to figure out how to be a point guard the same way that Steve Nash figured out over the years how to be a point guard. Steve Nash was not Steve Nash his first few years in the league.
And also, an intriguing fit with Westbrook because, again, the same thing with Rubio, where Curry can guard the other team's point guard, but kind of shift between shooting guard, point guard, and the offensive end. And then you think about, all right, here's a guy with 28-foot range, and then you have Durant, who has 28-foot range. Hey, holy mackerel.
Yeah, I
that'd be amazing.
I love that. I think that's the other smart pick for Oklahoma City. I feel bad for the Knicks a little bit. You know, they got on him quickly, and you could definitely see why Mike D'Antoni would love a guy like Stephen Curry. And I think we all would have loved to see Stephen Curry play for Mike D'Antoni.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think everybody over time started to get it that, you know, if the Knicks are so sold on this guy, maybe we should look at him. And he's been great in workouts. And unfortunately, Knicks fans, I don't think you're going to see Stephen Curry wear a Knicks uniform this year.
And that's why I don't like what's happening to the NBA draft. Because in the old days, you know, Stephen Curry could fall to 10 or 11 and I could go crazy about it in my column. Oh my God, what are these guys thinking? The same thing last year with Westbrook. Well, Russell Westbrook, number 13. My God, this guy's one of the best guys in the draft. And now it seems like guys fall to where they should fall. And even somebody like Johnny Flynn, who I agree, but a number 4 is a little high, but I do think he will, you know, when everything's said and done, will be one of the top 5 or 6 guys in this draft. That guy's a starting point guard. He's going to be good. But it just seems like guys are settling to the spot where they should settle.
That's because everybody reads my column now, Bill.
You think that? Well, you know, I do think that there's more information, there's more hyper intelligent information out there, and I don't think teams can just say, "Yeah, we're just going to take this random dude here at number 4, and you guys, you have to trust us." Can't do that anymore. People are too educated.
I do think I'm joking about it being me, but I do think
I
do think the internet has played a big role here. There's way more information about these prospects than there's ever been before. There's fans are much more well educated, and you're seeing this in Sacramento right now. There's all sorts of, you know, outraged callers in Sacramento. Why aren't we taking Ricky Rubio? 10 years ago, they wouldn't even known who Ricky Rubio was.
Right.
To take or to not take. And that's created a different dynamic. And I do think it's created a little bit of the consensus of the masses. My mock draft and others who talk to the GMs in the league and try to compile the general consensus, I think most times the consensus, the mob opinion is better than any individual opinion. And so I think you start to see those guys kind of rise to the top.
At least a really good example in 1998. When Oluwakandi famously went first.
Right.
And back then, people were saying to themselves, well, they're saying, you know, he's a franchise center. And they kind of trusted the information of the three people who talked about the draft at the time and then the wisdom of Elgin Baylor, which should have been a red flag. But, and then you really look at that Oluwakandi pick. The guy was 24, you know, when they picked him. That's a bad sign. He's 24. You are who you are at 24, basically. And then you think of all the guys that passed up, Bibby, Jameson, Carter, Nowitzki, Pierce. I just don't think they would have been able to get away with that pick 11 years later. I think that the people would have been on to the Oluwakandi thing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think in some ways that's happening a little bit with the beat this year. You know, enough people now are suspicious of the 7'3" center who doesn't score, and even though he played at UConn and you have a more familiarity level with them, most of these guys bust in the draft.
Yeah.
And I think fans are starting to kind of understand what looks like a suspicious bust pick, and what looks like a legitimate solid pick in the draft. And you know, we could talk about Tyler Hansbrough, who I think is this year's kind of comfort food. It's such a crappy draft. All these GMs just said, this guy will not be in the first round. And I heard that all year. Now they're coming back and saying, wow, but, you know, he works so hard. And, you know, it's almost like this kid's a freshman and they just discovered this guy. He's been 4 years at North Carolina, the exact same player all 4 years. And you have GMs talking about him like they just found this guy.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think anybody has had more flips and flops over a four-year span as a draft prospect than Hansborough. Can you think of a guy? He's been everywhere from he's going to be a lottery pick to he's going to be a top eight pick to he's not going to be a first-round pick. He's just gone bounced around. He's been like a stock.
He has because he doesn't fit the prototype of what we come to kind of expect from a successful NBA player. But then he went into the combine and he did two things that I think blew people away. He measured bigger than people thought. He measured and half an inch taller than Blake Griffin, who no one was really questioning. He's 6'10" in shoes, 6'8" and a half in socks. And he had a standing reach. He had a decent wingspan, like a 6'11" wingspan. And, his standing reach was very solid. He was the same size as Amari Stoudemire, and his athleticism was okay. It wasn't terrible like I think we all thought it would be.
Right. Well, how much of it almost seems like the draft is becoming more simple because teams are now looking at the numbers of the guys in college. And this is something that I think Darryl was one of the first guys who really tried to translate college numbers into what they might look like as a pro. And, it's not rocket science, but if you're going to average 12 rebounds a game in college, there's a good chance you're going to rebound pretty well in the pros.
I agree with you, though. This year, there's some strangeness because how do you explain Drew Holiday? For example, who had a terrible year at UCLA. His numbers don't translate to anything. How do you explain DeMar DeRozan, a guy who for two-thirds of the season looked nothing like an NBA prospect until he really started to get hot at the end. You could have Drew Holiday taken in the top 10, and it will be hard to name the last college player who was drafted in the top 10 that averaged less than 10 points a game that was a guard.
I can explain it to you like this. This is the worst draft in 9 years. It stinks. Yeah. There's like five good guys in this draft, and that's it. And I think the more people look at these guys compared to everybody else, they start saying stuff like, Tariq Evans, if he had been moved to point guard earlier, they're rationalizing. The bottom line is these guys didn't do it, whereas you have guys who I know can do it, like Stephen Curry. I think Rubio can do it. I actually am not 100% against the beat. I just think top three is too high. But I think on the right team, surrounded by the right guys, he might block some shots and kind of be an asset. You know what I mean?
So you're gonna give Chris Wallace a good grade if he drafts Seth the Beat on?
No, I don't think he should go in the top six. I'm saying if the Knicks got him at eight, not a bad pick. Like at that point,
can you imagine Knicks fans though with the Beat? That would be brutal.
Well, if you're a Knicks fan and they end up with Johnny Flynn, you're not upset.
No, actually he'd probably be the most popular pick after Curry and Rubio. My guess is that Johnny Flynn would be the most popular pick from Knicks fans. I don't think they're going to go that direction, but he would be popular.
Where is this Tariq Evans kind of has a Dwayne Wade feel to him? How did that start, and when is it going to end?
It's going to end when he starts to play. Because
I don't see it.
Because Dwayne Wade is a freakish athlete, and Evans is a very, very average athlete.
Yeah.
The one thing Evans has that Dwayne Wade has is that freakishly long wingspan. When they get to the basket, they have that way of kind of being sneaky about it because they're so long. He's got a good body and he does charge the lane. I mean, he's like a bowling ball there in the lane, but he finishes usually below the rim. He's not explosive athletically. He's terrible laterally. I don't think he's also the great kid that Dwayne Wade was. Just an upstanding, all-around great kid. I don't think that's Tyreke Evans. And I know some teams love him. I don't get it.
And on top of it, Dwayne Wade came through in the NCAAs and Tariq Evans didn't. But other than that, it's right. A lot of similarities. You mentioned DeRozan. You mentioned Holiday, who, I'm on the West Coast. I watched both of those guys. Never did I at any point think I was watching a top 10 draft pick.
Okay.
Kind of like Earl Clark. I know there's some questions about him.
You watch Earl Clark, and you fall in love. I mean, here's a 6'10 guy who can play like a guard.
Yeah.
He can handle. He can shoot. He actually rebounds. He's not soft. He went out and rebounded 9 rebounds a game at Louisville.
There's some social questions about him.
There's some social questions. That's a nice way to put it. There's some social questions.
Yeah.
And I think there's also just – some motivational types of questions. You know, how hard is he going to work? How much is he going to push himself? He is a top five talent in this draft. Who could be Tim Thomas, a guy who you always wanted to love, but he just, you know, Tim Thomas made like $100 million in the league with GM just saying, maybe just but one more year, he'll turn into something that he's never going to be. And I think Earl Clark could be that guy, or it could be Lamar Odom, a guy who also had some, what did you say, social issues?
Yes, Lamar Odom still does.
Lamar Odom had some social issues, but he tended to mature over time. And, you know, now he has a ring and you know, was a very nice role player for the Lakers.
When your two comps are Lamar Odom and Tim Thomas, your career is going to be pretty interesting. I don't know how it's going to play out, but I know I'm going to be intrigued. I also like Ty Lawson, and I just hate the combines and all this crap, because how about this? Watch the tapes. They couldn't stop him in the tournament, and they won the tournament because of the way he got to the rim, and you can't tell me that in the pros he's not going to be able to get to the rim.
I don't know. I don't love Ty Lawson. I loved him in college. I think the system, the way they played at North Carolina – really open things up for him. I mean, how would Eric Maynor have looked in that at North Carolina, or how would Johnny Flynn have looked at North Carolina?
But can he get to the rim or not? He can get to the rim.
He can get to the rim. He uses his speed, but he's more of a north-south guy than a east-west guy. And is he going to be able to create his own shot in the league? You know, I'm not sold. And the other thing is, he's not a great athlete. He finishes again below the rim. I think he's a good prospect. I think there's better guys in the draft. I'm glad we're finally disagreeing about something. This was getting kind of freaky.
Yeah, but at this point in the draft, we're, you know, it's almost a crapshoot.
Yeah, is he going to be a good backup or a bad backup is what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess best case scenario, Aaron Brooks, if he develops a 3-point shot.
He doesn't have that lateral quickness that Aaron Brooks does, though. He does in a straight line. You watch him move laterally, and I'll tell you the guy who has that lateral quickness, two guys, Jeff Teague out of Wake Forest. He's probably the quickest first step in the draft. And Brandon Jennings, you know, there's a lot of problems with Brandon Jennings, but he's got Allen Iverson type of quickness and ability to get to the basket.
Everyone's saying this is like the best point guard draft ever. I'm not totally on board with that, obviously. I think it's going to be a great draft for backup point guards.
Yeah, there'll be 10, 11 point guards who make the league. Maybe two or three of those guys turn into really good kind of quality starting point guards. The rest, I think, will be backups. My guy's Maynor out of VCU.
Oh, man, we agree on the same guy. That was my guy. I was mad that he was a first rounder. I thought he was a second round sleeper. I love Maynor.
I do, too. And he's the guy. He doesn't have a big hole in his game. He does a little bit of everything. All these other point guards you're picking and choosing, they're really strong in some areas, really weak in others. Maynor is solid across the board, and he's got those intangible leadership qualities that I don't think a lot of the other point guards have. I think he's going to be the guy who's going to go. He's going to go, maybe Indiana takes him at 13, probably more like he's in the late teens, early 20s, and he's going to end up being one of the two or three best point guards in this draft.
I'll give you a term you can start using, Chad.
Okay.
This is a good one. This is good. Well, because you had the same terms you throw out, the freakish and motor, all that stuff.
I did Uber Athletic for you a few years ago.
Thank you. Here's another one for you.
Okay.
Maynor has ownership of the position.
Ownership of the position.
Ownership. He is a real point guard. He is a guy that if we're in a playground game, everyone would all agree this guy is the point guard of one of the teams, and he's going to handle the ball, and I'm not going to say, hey, I want to dribble it up this time. This guy's the ownership of the – he has ownership of the position. He's a real point guard. He's an old-school point guard. He's not a – I played shooting guard, but then they put me a point guard. He's a guy who's been playing point guard since he was like 3.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about him, and that's why I just don't think there's a lot of guys like that in the league anymore.
I'm going to add that to the nuclear athleticism.
Nuclear, yeah, that was a good one.
That was
too.
A good one. That was a nice one.
That was a good one.
And the Uber Athletic, and I can't remember. You had one other one, but
Uber was good.
Uber's good. In your book, can you have a chapter on new adjectives to use to describe basketball players?
Drop jaw was the other one.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
that one?
Yeah, drop jaw. I like that.
Drop jaw athleticism.
That's right.
Let me ask you this. Why can't Phoenix just trade Amar'e Stoudemire to Washington for Jameson and Ethan Thomas, the number 5 pick? Can't we all agree that that trade makes sense, and then Washington can realize their destiny of the run-and-gun 80s team, and they'd have Arenas and Amar'e and Butler, and they could just do their thing?
If Robert Sarver wasn't so cheap, I think that would be it. But Jameson just signed that extension. He's out too many years. There was a deal, and I wrote a little bit about this, and everybody went nuts because it's kind of a nuclear option for Phoenix.
Yeah.
But it was a deal where they could send Shaq to Cleveland, and Amari to Washington. Ilgauskas was going to go to Washington, and they got back all those expiring contracts and the number 5 pick in the draft. And the idea was, this way the Suns can truly start to rebuild, and they'll have cap room, and they'll have some young players. They'll have at this point 5 and 14, and they can just get on with their life. I think the Suns have to make a decision. They're either competing for a championship or they're rebuilding. What they're doing now is this kind of Twilight Zone limbo where they're not quite good enough, but they're not bad enough to actually start to restock. They've got to decide one way or the other. And I know that deciding to blow up the team means they lose Nash, but they're going to lose Nash anyway, I think.
And that's what it comes down to, is they're terrified to lose Nash, but they don't want to spend enough money to build a championship contender around him. And, you know, they don't have the move in their arsenal like what the Spurs just did. They're not going to say, all right, hey, we're doing this. Here's our commitment move to you, Steve Nash. They're just kind of hoping he signs there out of guilt, and they're not really making a move either way. And I don't know. I just don't think that owner wants to own that team. Why do you own a basketball team if you don't want to spend money? Especially in Phoenix, a team that has been contending really ever since they got a team in 1970. What is in it for you to be that guy who is at dinner while other people glare at you and say, oh, that's the guy who ruined the Suns?
Aren't there like five owners at least that you wonder why are they owners?
Yeah, why?
Michael Heisley?
Yeah, why?
What about Bob Johnson in Charlotte? Why are these guys owners? How did the league approve these guys? Shouldn't one of the criteria for an NBA owner is that you have so much money that you don't care whether you lose money or not in the NBA? I mean, shouldn't that be a requirement?
Well, I think Sarver did have money when he bought the team, and that
he
quickly
just lost it all.
Yeah, Sterling is the one guy that I will defend, because and not for the reason you think. I just think he's figured out that this is just a racket. He pockets $10-20 million every year from the Staples Center deal he has, and by keeping his payroll low. And because people will pay LA prices to watch this crappy team, he's actually making money. He's probably made more money on that team than anybody other than the St. Louis Spirits owners who got that TV deal for perpetuity, whatever. But he's probably made $300 million off that team, plus the franchise sale price increased.
Yeah, but what does that do for the league? I mean, does anybody care whether he made $300 million or not?
I know, but they can't do anything. Like, we learned from the George Shinn thing. Like, they can't force guys to sell a team no matter what. Like, even Stern doesn't have that power, which is kind of crazy when you think about it. You think all the things Stern has been able to do, and he can't get anyone to own a team. I mean, to sell a team. So we don't think really there's going to be any other big trades now.
Oh, I think there'll be big trades.
But before Thursday.
Yeah, I think there's going to be more trades.
Clippers?
The Clippers are talking to a lot of guys. I think Minnesota has been super active. David Kahn is trying to prove that he was a better GM candidate than you.
Has he buttered you up yet?
Let's not talk about that. let's not talk about that. You know, he's a guy who's out there to prove he should have this job. He was under a lot of criticism. A lot of people in the league don't like him.
He doesn't deserve the job. What is that? He has less credentials than I do.
I may agree with that. I may agree with that. I have to deal with him more than you do. But
when he was at the Indiana GM, quote unquote, he was living in Portland. How do you live in another city than when you're allegedly the GM? That was his one credential. They're like, yeah, we hired Indiana's old GM. No, actually, he didn't. Donnie Walsh was still running the team.
Wasn't this the final nail in the coffin for Glenn Taylor? I mean, he keeps Kevin McHale on for all of these years.
I know.
And then when it's finally time to hire a real GM, he has the courage to say no to Stack and Hoiberg because they've been there too long. And I kind of admired that. I mean, that must have been really difficult for him to tell those guys, I'm sorry, we're going a different direction. And then drumroll, please, our new GM is David Kahn, the guy that may be less qualified than Kevin McHale.
And who will then get rid of Kevin McHale. Who?
Well, you got to give him props on that.
But why? I actually thought the team responded to Kevin McHale. I mean, I don't think he was a good GM, but he actually was a half decent coach. It seemed like.
Yeah, I liked him as a coach, but
I did too.
You know, you and I would have done the same thing. I mean, you can't, after him being the GM for so many years, you can't come in and start to rebuild that franchise with Kevin McHale and his relationship with the owner and all the other stuff going around you all the time.
Yeah, I guess. I just thought McHale. You know, the irony is that McHale would have been an awesome announcer. And he would have been an awesome coach and somehow became a GM instead.
Yeah.
And was a bad one. Although, yeah, I guess he does get credit for the KG pick, but after that it was all downhill.
We were talking at lunch. We hope ESPN makes a run at Kevin McHale. Yeah, I think he'd be a fantastic announcer.
I remember thinking when he retired, this guy's the next John Madden.
Right.
This guy, and you know, if you remember, he was doing TV, local TV in Minnesota for a couple of years, and I remember I was at a friend's house who had a satellite, which was like a big deal in like 1994, 95. And McHale was announcing the game and he was so freaking funny. And he was like, wow, why isn't this guy on national TV? But maybe that's what will end up happening. I do think it seems like the Clippers are just bound and determined to move either Kamen or Camby. It's going to be one or the other. And they're going to trade and they're hoping to trade Kamen, but who wants Kamen? Nobody. So they're going to have to trade Camby and then. Probably for a dumb trade like Mike Miller, something like that, which would be depressing.
You know, we had a classic encounter coming out of the when I went into the Chicago pre-draft combine right there at the hotel. I was walking into the door right when Blake Griffin and then Neil O'Shea of the Clippers were walking in at the same time, and I made a comment to Blake Griffin about. You know, how are you recovering from finding out you're going to be a Clipper?
Oh no.
And Neil jumps in and says, "Oh yeah, like we're such a bad team." And he talked about Al Thornton and he talked about Eric Gordon and you know how progressive their front office was. And then now this is all happening in front of Blake Griffin and I start talking about Zach Randolph and about the contract that they gave Chris Kamen. And is Blake Griffin the most depressed number one pick ever? He could have went to Oklahoma City. He could have went to the Wizards. He could have went to the Knicks. And he goes to the worst franchise in sports.
And has to battle for playing time with Zach Randolph.
And has to battle for playing time with Zach Randolph because you know they can't just keep Zach Randolph on the bench.
Which was one of the reasons why that was one of the worst trades of the decade. Basically, if Ketino Mobley has a heart problem, then have him have the heart problem on your team. Get the insurance money. What are you giving him to another team for?
Yeah.
That whole thing was, they're such a mess. You know what's funny is that Andy Roser is now, I think, has final say on every move. This is a guy who has less basketball experience than David Kahn. He was basically the first CFO who's ever had the final hammer on basketball decisions. So it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with. They won't fire Dunleavy, even though the fans have said we don't want to come back. They're losing season ticket money because this guy's coming back as coach. It's a mess. I feel bad for Blake Griffin. As you said, he could have gone to the team that should not be named and had a very happy life. Would you trade, if you're the Clippers, would you trade Griffin, number ones in 2010, 12, and 14 for Durant?
Wait, four first round picks.
Yeah,
and okay, four first round picks for Durant.
Yeah, because I could tell you right now that nobody in LA is really that excited about Blake Griffin. He's not selling tickets.
They'd screw up. They'd screw up whoever they do it. So why would they do that?
If you're the Thunder, would you ask for Blake Griffin plus three future number ones for Kevin Durant?
Well, see, I wouldn't trade Kevin Durant if I was the Thunder because I believe that Kevin Durant is going to be an MVP in this league.
Oh, wow.
Oh, what?
Oh, this is great. What a moment. I'm applauding.
You're applauding.
What happened to Greg Oden?
Because I've been so consistent in my opinion all these years.
What happened to your man, Greg Oden?
Greg Oden's going to be all right.
Is he going to be an MVP?
That's not looking that way right now. But you know, I'll give him more than 1 year. It's not looking that way right now.
I'm going to Simmons versus Ford, 2007.
You find where I say that Kevin Durant isn't a fantastic basketball player.
Here's the analogy I use. Taking Kevin Durant is like dating a supermodel. She's hot. Everyone thinks you're cool for being next to her. For a few years, everything is great. But when it's time to settle down, have kids, start a life, she's eyeing younger guys, partying late at night, leaving you in the dust the next time a good thing comes along. Your argument actually was that you just didn't think Durant would stay with the team.
That was my argument.
Yeah. Which
I said he was a hot supermodel. He may be more loyal, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we don't know that yet. We don't know whether he's going to stay in Oklahoma City.
But you know, bringing us back full circle, and I know you have to go and chase down 400 trade rumors. This is another reason to take Rubio. Because if you're Kevin Durant, why would you want to leave Ricky Rubio? Yes. Here's this guy who was put on earth just to make you better, just to create wide open shots for you and dunks on fast breaks. This is the single most fun guy in the league to play with, probably for the next 10 years now that Nash is kind of on his way out. Like, who can you think of anyone else who would be this fun to play with?
No, and you know, that's a really good point, because Sam Presti and Danny Ferry both came out of the Spurs, you know, GM mill. But they had such different approaches to their superstar. Danny Ferry felt like, I got to get a lot of veterans around LeBron, and we got to compete for a championship right away. And he really set himself up, because now LeBron doesn't have anybody young to kind of grow around. There's pressure on them every year that they've got to win the title or LeBron's leaving. And now these guys are getting older. They're the Cavs are in real trouble, because it is going to be hard for LeBron to look at Cleveland and really come up with good reasons to stay there other than it's his hometown, and he certainly would break the hearts of Cavs fans everywhere if he stayed. He will have better options. Sam Presti seems to kind of understand, I need to surround Kevin Durant with young talent. They can grow together. They'll continue to get better gradually, and right when it's time for Kevin Durant to decide to leave or not to leave is right when we're going to be start to make our run as a real kind of contender, and that's going to be too alluring for him to walk away from. The Cavs, I think their formula was all wrong. They should have surrounded LeBron with young guys. I think Presti's got it right.
The Cavs, what they did to LeBron was really a disaster. He's been was he on the team for 6 years?
Yeah, it's hard to believe, but yeah, it's 6 years.
They did all these different things to try to find him that Pippen type of guy. And now we're heading into year seven, still hasn't happened. And I think you're right. I think, you know, let's say they get knocked out in round two next year. He's gone. He leaves.
For basketball reasons, he should. I know there's other emotional reasons, but yeah, for basketball reasons, I think LeBron should leave, because I don't see a future in Cleveland. If Mo Williams is your second best young player, I don't see a future in Cleveland.
And this is why last February was such a tragedy, and then they had that Serbia contract. Here's your one chance to basically get this guy for free, a wingman. Maybe not a Pippen type, but somebody that you can go to war with, you know? And whether it was Antoine Jameson, Richard Jefferson, Vince Carter, Shaq, whoever, somebody, get him a body. And they didn't, and then that contract is now gone. And now, really, they only have the Ben Wallace-Pavlovich combo to do anything. Yeah. And J.J. Hickson. Is anyone excited about J.J. Hickson?
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of talent, but...
And now they just watched Richard Jefferson go. That's one of the guys that was on the block that at least has some talent. Will they do Vince Carter again? I mean, I always felt like that was the trade they should have made.
What about Michael Redd?
Michael, well, he's coming off, you know what, ACL surgery right now?
Yeah, but do you roll the dice with a Ben Wallace for Michael Redd and just kind of hope he gets healthy?
I'll tell you what, the Bucks would do that in a heartbeat, because I don't know that we even know yet. You know, when players are older like Michael Redd is and they start to have those injuries, it's not like, you know, Amari Stoudemire bouncing back in day one. It takes a little bit longer, and that could be a huge risk. But again, it's an old player.
Yeah.
And they need a young player to come in and play with LeBron, and they've really struggled to find that guy. You know, the list of guys that they're talking about, whether it's Shaq or you know, Vince Carter, at least is a really good player, and I think they would have won the title with Vince Carter last year.
Hey, by the way, just to interrupt you for a second, I'd like to congratulate the Bucks for turning what pick was Ejin Lan?
Six.
For turning the sixth pick basically into three expiring contracts. Congratulations to Milwaukee. Here's an FU to our fans. And next year we took Joe Alexander, even though we had nine small forwards. But, I mean, man, you look at what's happened with some of these teams, and it's just incredible. They got nothing for the sixth pick in the draft. They gave it away. Unbelievable.
They gave it away.
We learned a valuable lesson. Don't judge a guy by his workout against a chair.
That's true. That's true. And that actually speaks, believe it or not, in Ricky Rubio's favor, who had an awful workout against the chair in Sacramento. And people should not read anything into a guy who hasn't played basketball in a month flying into the city and having to work on the chair. I think it boggled Rubio's mind. Like, he'd probably never even done anything like that before. I'm a basketball player. Why does the NBA have me working out against a chair?
I'm not going to blame you for Yi Jin Lam, because as it turned out, he was like 4 years older than we thought. I think if he's 19, it's a more defensible pick. I think you take the guy and it turns out he's 23. That's a disaster.
You're not blaming me for him? That's good. That's good.
I'm not going to blame you for that. Okay. Did you know he was 23?
Yeah, I knew. I didn't know. I mean, he swore he was 19. I don't know.
I can tell you this much. Danny Ainge was going to take him.
Yeah.
Well, lock that one down. He was going fifth to the Celtics if they kept that pick.
You know, meet Earl Clark. I mean, there's yet another guy, right? I mean, the size, the tools, the kind of play like a guard, no motor, no toughness. You know, we haven't talked about the guy. I can't believe you haven't talked more about this, but maybe you didn't follow college basketball enough. I promise you, you will at least have 3 10,000-word columns about Terrence Williams before his career is done.
Oh no, I enjoyed him. I did watch Louisville. I don't know what direction his career is going to go, but there's about 48 different scenarios.
I think we're on our test. Not from a violent streak. I don't want to impugn him with he's going to attack fans in the stands or, things like that. But he has got to be the quirkiest, most eccentric player that I've come along in a long time.
Yeah.
And one of the GMs who interviewed him says it was like Ronnie was in the room, that here's this kid who has the kind of mentality of a 12-year-old, talking. And, you know, he carried a Barbie backpack around with him at Louisville.
Yes, he did.
And had SpongeBob socks. And you've got some columns coming on him. I would cheer for him to go to a great place. I think he's going to Charlotte, so him and Larry Brown should be tons of fun.
Where's the best place he could go for comedy's sake?
Oh,
I mean, I want him in a bigger market, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you'd love him in New York because they would follow his every movement every day. They'd have, you know, New York Post page 6 have a dedicated photographer to follow him wherever he went.
What about the Nets? Lopez, he's crazy.
They may draft him. They could go to comic book conventions together.
Yeah.
They could watch cartoons in the morning. they could trade, Barbie DVDs.
Yeah. That would be good. I also think DeJuan Blair is going to be good. I don't know if he's a starter, but I think he's somebody that would – I could see him being in the top 7 or 8 on the 50-win team. He'd be like maybe the 8th guy.
I loved him until I found out he didn't have ACLs. And then I had
– Do you need those? I forgot.
it seems like when you hurt your ACL in basketball, you're out like a year. This guy doesn't have ACLs, and everybody's like, yeah, what's the big deal? I mean – He has been. I mean, he hasn't had ACLs in Pittsburgh, and he was pretty good. And I didn't see him missing any time for knee injuries. But I think over time, that could be what's going to scare guys off. I love DeJuan Blair as well, but you can understand why a team who drafting high wants to get more than maybe 2-3 years out of their pick before there could be potential knee issues. And I hope for his sake they're not, because talk about a great kid and a kid who I think people are going to really love to be around. He's got a little bit of Charles Barkley in his personality that's going to make him a fun guy to be in the league.
He reminds me of Turiaf in that there's a serious medical question about him, mm-hmm. but he's an awesome guy. He's an overachiever. He produced in college, and he will be a good pro. And eventually teams are going to be like, damn, I wish I had taken him.
Yeah.
I think 17 to 20 is about right for him in this crappy draft. Normally he's a late first rounder, but considering it's such a lousy draft, it moves up 10 spots.
He may go higher. And by the way, let's say you go 16 and you make $1.2 million. What free agent could you get on the market that could do what DeJuan Blair does for $1.2 million?
That's a great point. I didn't think of that.
And maybe that's what a team just has to think about, because this kid can play right away. He's going to be one of the best offensive rebounders in the league. He's physical, and even if he's only going to, even if he only lasts 3 years, then I got a power forward who rebounds for $1.2 million a year for 3 years. That's the best bargain in the league.
I forgot to mention one thing to you when you brought up the Bobcats.
Okay.
I think Iverson's going there. I have no inside info. It just seems like a natural fit to me. Larry Brown, Michael Jordan, they need kind of that alpha dog scorer type. They don't really have a guy like that. And not only that, but I think he's going to have a huge comeback season. This guy's been counted out at every point of his life. And every time you think he's done, he comes back. I could see him having one good season for them.
All right.
What do you think of that?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, I think Larry Brown's the only coach who's willing to coach Allen Iverson right now. And I do think Larry prides himself. And I think this is partly the Terrence Williams thing. He prides himself in saying, I can take strange, difficult players, and I can get them to all play together as a team, and that's part of what I do as Larry Brown. And so I could definitely see the appeal that he would have of being the guy who gets Allen Iverson back on track in his career, but he better only give him a 1 or 2 year deal.
They sign Iverson. They draft Terrence Williams with the guys that they had last year. It's a pretty interesting team.
Yeah, playoff team probably.
Yeah,
playoff team. And, you know, let's just pray Michael Jordan doesn't give Iverson $80 million to do it.
All right, Chad Ford, enjoy your 2009 title. My book is done, and I'll be watching a ton of college hoops next year, and I will be back to reclaim it in 2010.
All right, 2010, I'll be ready.
And we will check for you on ESPN.com, ESPN News, ESPN, ESPN2, every other ESPN channel we have.
The correct? Ocho.
The Ocho, okay.
All right,
take
buddy.
Care.
Bye.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
That concludes, ends, finishes, wraps up another BS Report. With all the talk about baseball, the upcoming football season, and hockey playoffs, Bill Simmons neglected to mention something which frankly cannot go unstated. Okay, here goes. For a limited time, hurry into Subway and enjoy the new Tuscan Chicken Melt. Lovely seasoned chicken, melted bubbly cheese with olive vinaigrette, piled so high with the crisp veggies you love on your choice of freshly baked bread. All that deliciousness with 9 grams of fat. It's part of a fresh fit meal.